Welcome to another episode of the biggest podcast, sitting down with members of the One Bone fam who are doing it. Today, we have someone exceptional in the house. You see it on the brim of his hat, Goliath. We don't say his government name here.
They're looking for me.
He's just Goliath to us. And what's really cool is I'd say about 6 months ago or 8 months ago, you came in on tour. You are a driver. You have an extensive life in the music industry.
I've been doing it for a very long time.
And when we were here, we were like, we're going to be getting the podcast going in the near future.
Like, it was a dream.
Yeah.
Now it's for real.
Exactly.
I don't know what number we're on, but.
Well, I don't know either. I know that we have released 9 episodes.
Okay.
And I don't know where you're going to fit in exactly. But when you're watching or listening to this, you know exactly what episode number it is. So Goliath is in the house, and you know, on the biggest podcast, we talk about certain triumphs you've gone through, certain failures you've gone through, your relationship with clothing, your experience with One Bone, all these things. We're going to dive into all that stuff just to get your wheels turning.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of those things that kind of relate to each other too.
Yeah, absolutely. And exactly, every win is a loss and every loss is a win if you look at it that way.
Yeah.
So where I want to start is basically, what are you up to in your life right now? And then take me back to how you got into this whole thing.
Okay. Well, since COVID started, I've been focused mostly on driving. That was an accidental thing.
Okay.
I always ended up driving I've been in the music industry since I was 15-ish. I used to build websites.
How old are you now? 17?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost 18.
Yeah.
No, I'm 31.
Cool.
And I've been playing in music and other local bands since I was like 16. So 15, 16. So, God, 16 years now. But I was in just a bunch of local bands. I played guitar. I sang. I played bass. And when I turned around 18, I bought a 15-passenger van for my band.
Right.
Because I wanted to be able to get to, I lived in Houston at the time. I grew up in Florida until I was 16, and then we moved to Houston after my dad got out of the military. And in Houston is where I kind of like flourished into the music scene and really wanted to, like, this is what I want to do. And I started building websites and going to local shows and being parts of bands. And then I eventually bought a van, and all of the local bands in my area are like, oh, that guy has got a van. So they would ask me if I could drive them to Dallas,
right,
or Houston or San Antonio or whatever, just do shows outside of our city and make other people in the state known of the bands.
Yeah.
So that turned into kind of nationally, like my first national tour ever was with Sleeping with Sirens, doing merch for them. And the only reason that even came about is because this was MySpace days. And
right.
All the bands back then used to like proudly put who they were managed by, like, you know, managed by this company.
It was a form of validation.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Cause like if you had this name on your about me or whatever, it's like,
yeah,
we're managed by that guy. Those are the same guys that manage, you know, Asking Alexandria or
right,
Whitechapel or whoever. So I basically just went through all the bands that I listened to at the time's MySpace pages and would go through who they had listed as their manager or their booking agent or whoever. And I just emailed and contacted everybody. I was like, hey, I'm 18 years old. I have a 15-passenger van. I want to tour nationally. The band that I'm in is just never going to kick off. So
yeah,
however I can get on the road, because I know this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
So eventually Will Stevenson, if you ever hear this, thank you, Will. Will Stevenson contacted me back. He worked for the Artery Foundation at the time, and he was so many bands' managers, but he was Sleeping with Sirens' manager, and they were just about to release their first album, or just had released their first album.
Okay.
And they were about to cancel their third tour in a row because the engine in their van blew up or whatever. So they needed my van in order to do that.
Everything happens for a reason.
Well, I've never told this story out loud, but they would have gotten dropped from from Rise Records at the time had they not had a vehicle for this next tour, because it was their third tour, contractual stuff, I'm sure, blah, blah, blah. I was way out of the loop and 18 at the time, but they needed a vehicle. So I drove from Texas up to Michigan and started a tour with them and didn't know what I was really going to do. I thought I was just going to be like driving and hanging out. And the first night they did a local show and they're like, we don't have anybody to sell merch for us. It's like, I'll sell merch. Why not? And I gave it a shot. And they thought they were only going to make like $300-$400. And we ended up making like $1,500, $1,600.
Let's go.
Like, you're our merch guy now.
Right. Yeah.
So taught myself how to do merch. First tour was Drop Dead Gorgeous, Attila, Sleeping with Sirens, For All Those Sleeping, Woe Is Me, Abandon All Ships and Scarlett O'Hara.
Wow.
So it was the Picnic Party Tour. And then just from meeting people on that tour, kind of just went downhill from there. Other bands from that tour asked me if they could use my van on their next tour, and it snowballed into tour managing and doing merch. And eventually I was in charge of all the merchandise and transportation for World of Dance on NBC.
Okay.
That was before COVID.
Yeah.
Merchandise started getting boring. I really love tour managing and security. I've done security for so many festivals, Coachella, Stagecoach, Life is Beautiful, everything.
Right.
And I thought that's the direction I was going in before COVID, and everything kind of just
stopped. Yeah.
It's like, well, how do I make my life still work? And I always ended up driving on most of those tours because it was either my van or because I don't drink. I've never been drunk in my life. I don't do any of that stuff. So I was always asked to drive at the end of the night because everybody else was torched and looking to get us back to the hotel.
Yeah.
So I grew up driving really, really young. I've known how to drive a trailer since I was like nine years old, super young.
Wild.
So just came natural to me. And when COVID kind of happened and I didn't know, like I had my whole year set up. COVID happened, like what was it, March 18th or something was like the last, like.
Yeah, or I think like March 13th.
It was earlier than that, yeah. So, but I think like March 13th is when everybody started shutting things down. And like by March 18th, all of the shows in the country and all the festivals.
It was over, yeah.
Because I usually spend my entire month of April in Coachella Valley setting up and everything for the 2 weekends of Coachella and the Stagecoach. But like 3 weeks or 2 weeks before I was supposed to leave, it was like, yeah, everything's done.
Yeah.
And we don't know how long it's going to be done for. So I was lucky enough that the state of Nevada, which is where I live in Las Vegas, they had an Obama-era policy, and I think most states do, called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act or something like that.
Okay.
And because of that, I was able to get my CDL, which here in Canada is called a Class 1.
Okay,
I think, for free, and the state of Nevada paid for it. So I took it as an opportunity. It's like, well, I know how to drive big vehicles. I've driven bandwagons and
box trucks. Yeah,
like this is I can guarantee go work or I'm just going to sit for 18 months and try to figure out inventive ways not to kill myself.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, that's sharp. Yeah. Don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah.
So I do miss being part of the show. That's my, like as a musician myself and always being a tour manager, the problem solving of it and the security aspect of it, just being in the shadow. I do miss being part of the show, but I'm still a cog in the machine.
Sure.
Like music, it brings emotions to people. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps talking about
it. Yeah, man. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Music brings emotions to people that nothing else on this planet can. Like and everybody goes to a show in order to feel those emotions safely with other people. And no matter how I can be involved in that, I know that I want to be in this industry.
Mm.
So I've tried everything I can to make it work. A lot of people have tried to get me out of the industry. I'm still here.
You're holding on for dear life.
You have no idea. Yeah. So many reinventions.
Yeah.
But I
think that's a huge essential part of any career that you're trying to achieve.
If you want something, it's the biggest piece of advice I can give to anybody. I told my cousin this when she was going to nursing school and she dropped out of nursing school and now she works for, have you seen the show, The Righteous Gemstones on HBO?
Yeah, of course.
She's in, my cousin Katie, shout out Katie. she is in charge of, I believe, all of the waste and disposal for everything on the show because it's all filmed in South Carolina, which is where they live. That's where my mom's side of the family's from, and Louisiana. But she was in nursing school because her mom's a nurse, my aunt, and she was basically like, I don't want to do this. I'm only doing it because my parents are doing it. I was like, look, life is too short. You know me intimately because you know my family story and how my shit that happened with my mom when I was younger. But don't be miserable. I worked for Google for a little bit. I was a computer programmer, and I realized that that's not what I wanted to do. Music is what I wanted to do. I just didn't know how to get there. If you want it bad enough, you will find a way.
Yeah.
And you're going to suck shit for a few years trying to figure it out, but those years of sucking shit are going to make connections in whatever industry or in whatever you want to do.
For sure.
That will get you to where you want. I started off at Coachella as a trash guy.
Yeah.
I would go around on the golf course grabbing trash bags and the grossest shit that you can imagine to 2 years later being in charge of the security team.
I think it just ties back into even, you know, what you were mentioning earlier with the MySpace days and reaching out to every manager. And I think, you know, there are people who are very fortunate to find what they are so passionate about at an early age. Then there are people who only figured it out when they're 70 years old. Having said that,
Or they figure out what they're passionate about and they don't know how to make it their way to make money.
Yes.
That's the problem, is everybody's usually working for the weekend instead of making the weekend their life.
Exactly. And
that's the hard part.
What you achieved, and again, like, you know, we always talk about this, the portrait of success always changes, mm-hmm. right? For you, you probably couldn't have seen a successful future unless you were on stage ripping. But then you keep going mm-hmm. and you're like, wait a second.
Well, that's not possible, but let's see how
and,
we can, yeah.
And not only that, but like, I'm such an integral part of the show, mm-hmm. whether you see it or not. And just knowing and understanding that and being married to your passion. And like you said, creating a career, creating a business, creating just sustainability for yourself.
You might not know how you're going to do it, but you can figure it out.
And
but you're going to fall on your face a million times.
Oh, 100%. But that's the process. Mm-hmm. That's the process that I think people neglect. Yeah, exactly.
That's because they're afraid of that. People are just genuinely, and what's the word I'm looking for? They're naturally afraid of failure.
I mean,
I don't know if Thomas Edison said it, a million other people have said it. I haven't found 10,000 ways not to invent, or it's not that I failed 10,000 times. I found 10,000 ways not to invent the light bulb. Like something like that. It's literally the way that you look at it. I've been beaten down in this industry so many times and thought that I was going to have to go get a real job. And if you want it, you can make it happen, but it's going to be a process.
Yeah. I think again, those sentiments are echoed in every industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you're hungry, if you're passionate, if you want to continue to succeed,
absolutely.
And again, whatever that level of success looks like, you have to be willing to either eat shit or just put in the fucking time and energy.
I'm sure you've seen it just starting One Bone.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I remember seeing the first like advertisements pushed like back when like this wasn't what it is
now.
And now to see what you have now is, I remember seeing the other building before it was built out. And now you got this huge, you have a real business now, man.
It's fucked up.
You remember when you didn't do this? You were in the music industry too?
Of course. Yeah. And again, like for me, I shared those same sentiments where success didn't look like anything but performing in front of hundreds of thousands of people. But then again, you start to weave in and out of life and you understand that the portrait of success changes. So my question is, what was that one moment? I know you mentioned a couple of things. Mm-hmm. What was that one moment that almost knocked you out of that passion? And then how did you sort of regroup? Was it COVID?
There's been a few times.
Yeah.
So I started, like I said, started touring in 2010. That was the first reinvention of it because it was like, okay, I'm a really big guy. And in the like hardcore metal side of things as a musician, unless they can sell the way that you look, then it's almost impossible to make a band popular. Like I remember there's a band that I worked with in Michigan. I don't want to say their name. Well, I guess I can. I'm Abomination because they're really not around anymore.
Okay.
But they were about to be signed to a label that was called Ferret Music at the time. And it eventually became something else and got bought out by Warner Brothers. But they were told each of the guys are about our size in the band. Big old dudes. And each of them were told, you have to lose 105 guys. You have to lose 150 pounds collectively as a band before we'll sign you. That was literally the deal that was put on their tables. Each one of you has to lose 30 pounds before we'll sign you. And they're like, get fucked.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to go. And because of that, they never made it big. They would have been a lot bigger. But that's how the industry, unfortunately, works. And well, at least back then.
Right.
Now it's a little bit more free because you can release anything you want to online.
Sure.
They were just tight avenues.
You can create your own movement as opposed to requiring a record label to help you create that movement.
Exactly. And that's what they were one of the first bands to kind of shy away from that. And I just, that was one of those moments that made me realize, because I was 17 or 18 when that happened to them, and I was just on that cusp of like, I either need to make a big band and make it big, or I need to figure out something else.
And lose weight.
Yeah.
So
that came eventually.
Yeah.
I used to be way bigger.
Oh, really?
I was closer to my heaviest weight was like 382 is the last time I looked at the scale before crying. but before COVID, I lost somewhere around 140 pounds in total. I got down to like 238 was the lowest number I saw on the scale.
What do you add now?
I haven't looked in a while, but I'm probably in the 270s or 280s.
Cool.
During COVID, I gained a bit of weight back.
And how tall are you?
6'5".
6'5". So it's a good segue going from a band who was literally not able to be signed because they were big and being bigger guys ourselves and One Bone and the whole, you know, concept of inclusivity and feeling good and feeling comfortable and confident in how you are wearing your clothing on a daily basis. Yeah. Now it's been how long that you're rocking One Bone?
I think I started wearing One Bone. It was either September or October.
Okay. When I came so it's when last. You came here. That was yeah, your first experience.
That was
experience.
My first shirt, yeah.
That was so, first shirt that I and had. You had known about us for...
A year at least.
A year.
Not longer. Because I've been talking to Big Body Cisco
yeah.
about y'all
he's a beauty.
For a few months. I love that guy. Yeah. Death. Every time I see him, it's always a good hang.
Number one hype man.
He's an amazing guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
Every time I shake his hand, he crushes it.
Yeah, he's got a big...
He's got a big metal
We've
hand.
Never met in person, but we're oh, like... No. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. You're in for a treat.
Yeah, 100%.
You guys should definitely swap podcasts.
Oh,
he's got a
we're going to. We're going to do a home and home for sure.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So, okay. So, big man, you've always been a big kid.
Always big.
Yeah.
Always big.
How did that impact you as, let's say, a teen growing up? And
it was always the big guy versus the little guy. So, I was a very gentle giant and very introverted at the time because I was incredibly book smart and I just didn't really socially. I have a touch of autism.
Okay.
And nobody knew that all the time. I was just the old soul.
Right.
Which means you're the weird kid that yeah, talks yeah, to the yeah. adults.
You were always wearing a cardigan?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. I was loafers.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But I ended up becoming, I was bullied horribly. My real last name is Pratt.
Okay.
And it rhymes with fat.
Yeah.
And I was Fat Pratt for years. Mm. Years and years, that was my nickname. And every week was a new nickname, like Baloney Nipples or whatever they can come up with to get you that time. And I would just always just let it happen because anytime I stood up for myself, it looked like the big guy versus the little guy. And I didn't want to ever be pictured that way. I wanted anybody to fear me.
Right.
But
yeah, you would take it as opposed to.
I was tortured. Yeah. I would just let it happen. Now, once in a while, I'd come up with a good kickback. And that's why I'm have the comedy, the sense of humor I have now. Because when being bullied as a kid forces you, if you can't be physical, it forces you into mental warfare.
Of course.
You have to get really good at finding what people say. Like, we said something over there, and I was really quick with it.
Yeah.
Like, just stupid stuff. Sometimes they're funny jokes, sometimes they're not, but I'll still get it in.
It refers to you. We were talking about the pant size and the D, and you were quick
something
with the
short
D.
Yeah. Something about a short
prefer
D.
Prefer a long D.
Most women prefer medium D.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, listen, it's not the size that matters, you know?
As long as the boat floats.
But it literally is, it's literally the tagline of One Bone. Size doesn't matter, fit does.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
You heard?
Yeah, but so I was in fifth grade, I was 5'3", sixth grade, 5'7", seventh grade, 5'10", I hit eighth grade I hit 6 foot in eighth grade.
Wow.
So I was and then kindergarten, I was like 99 pounds.
Right.
I was always just big chunky kid. And I like, football and all that stuff because of my size. But because of that, I was always like, the gentle giant that everybody kind of made fun of until one day I decided to go out. The school that I went to from sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, we would have the same teachers for sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. So you kind of had the same classmates for 3 years
okay.
and you kind of matured through that. Like
12, yeah, 13, yeah, 14, like you were, yeah.
That dickish part of life.
Yeah.
So all of these teachers for years had seen like this core group of kids just torturing me just mentally every day. And one day it was a reading portion of our language arts class or something, and Baloney Nipples was the code word that was whispered to me as this kid, I don't want to say his name, but as this kid passed by me. And I watched my own body get up out of my desk and follow him back to his desk and just started beating the hell out of the kid. And luckily, he was screaming bloody murder, and my teacher saw all of it, the whole class saw all of it. I thought for sure I broke my hand on his head. I thought for sure I was going to go to jail or something like that because we have school resource officers and all that. School resource officer came in the classroom, got him, and took him to the hospital. This was right before like winter vacation.
Wow.
Winter vacation happens. We come back. He's in a sling and his hands. I've shattered his hand because he was using it to cover his face. And my teacher never reported any of this. Because they had seen it happen. So some of my other teachers...
In a weird way, it was like long-term self-defense.
Yes, that's exactly what they saw.
Right.
And essentially, even though it wasn't, I pretty much attacked the kid.
Right.
But it was... Some of the other teachers, when we came back, were like, hey, I heard you got into a scuffle with so-and-so. Good job. Like, really?
Wow.
I'm getting... I should be, prison.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
so
listen,
that's where I kind of realized that, I can defend myself if I need to. I'm a bigger guy, and it's not necessarily beating somebody up. But from that point forward... The respect changed. Like all the people in class realized that I just got away with almost murder.
Yeah.
And like, this guy's untouchable.
It's
that's when my personality kind of kicked.
It's, you know, I watched the Shaq documentary, which, you know, to not name drop, but to definitely name drop, Shaq rocks one bone sure. in and the documentary. But he was talking about
that. I love
that.
Miles' son. I've worked with Shaq and his family a few times.
Oh, sick.
Miles, as kid, is such a sweetheart.
Yeah, so we actually, low-key, just got a picture of Shaq rocking one bone yesterday.
I saw it in the wild.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, he was saying in the documentary, he's like, it was always that reaction where it was like, it's easy for me because I was so much bigger and I would just destroy kids. And then something switched in his head where it was like, what am I trying to do here?
Exactly.
You know? Like,
I never got to that point too, but as soon as it happens, it's like, okay, I've made the point that if you walk past the dog's yard every day and the dog's barking and you keep throwing shit at it, if the chain breaks, run.
Right.
And that kind of thing. But once the dog gets out of the yard, you go like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Do I go back?
Yeah.
So it's the same situation. I never had to do anything like that again. Like, I've been in situations where I've defended friends because of my size and stuff, but I've never initiated another fight.
Right.
That wasn't really a fight. I beat this kid's ass. But I've never been that guy to where, like, I need to be the bully because of my size. I've always been the person
has been bullied.
Been bullied and then realized, oh, I don't need that. Like, high school, I wasn't bullied at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the nickname Goliath came from, was like when I was in ninth grade. So kind of reinvented myself and no longer had the bullies. And
yeah, you turned it into your superpower. It's the exact reason why the biggest is on the inside of every shirt, is because growing up, being the biggest is never a good thing.
Nope.
And you're always picked last, or you're...
Or you're picked first, but not for the good things.
Yeah, no, exactly. But yeah, literally. And so...
Well, we're playing dodgeball.
Yeah, exactly. But so that, you know, that's part of the reason why we put the biggest on the inside. It's another part of the reason as to why one bone, to make sure there's the number one in the name, so that as the big guy, we know that we come first, finally, that we know that
it
we're
is really
one.
Nice. It's nice to be able to open my closet. Like, the last time I was here, I bought so many items.
Yeah.
And I have them. I just moved into a new place where I have tons of space. So I have all of my, like, production shirts and everything together in the corner. That's where I have to pull them apart. But I have all the one bones, like, perfectly spaced. So as soon as I open the door, it's like, depending on what pants I'm wearing this day, depends on what shirt I'm going to wear this day, or vice versa. I want to wear that shirt today. Okay, what pants go with that?
Yeah. So let's dive into that a little bit. So now it's been, I guess we're
Six
coming
months,
up on yeah, or maybe a little bit more. You found out about one bone.
I forget, it's August. I'm in a different city every day.
Yeah.
I forget time passes so quickly.
Exactly. It's almost a year, man. Yeah. So you noticed one bone a year prior, I guess, either through Cisco or either through...
It was probably through social media.
Yeah, exactly.
It was more likely through social media.
So you tried one bone for the first time when you were here. Mm-hmm. You didn't pull the trigger as an internet brand. You didn't bite on the ad. You made a connection.
That's
with
the scary
us.
Thing is because there's so many. There's, I mean, I'm not going to name any of the other big brand companies.
No,
that are
but
out there.
There's so many.
But I've tried them too.
Yeah.
Like, if I could say one, like the no.
Wow. Listen.
Okay. Never mind.
You know.
But they're still great products.
Yeah.
But you, unfortunately, as a big guy, you have that hesitation, even because I'm not in the store. I can't try it on. I can't feel it. I don't know what I look like in this. Do I look fatter in this than I think that I look?
All hope is like
how
lost.
Do my tits look?
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. Like, so you don't know. So when it comes to a third party company or it comes to ordering something online, you have to go like, what's the return policy?
Yeah.
Or like if I wear it out.
Which
once,
is free exchanges and returns, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's one of the things as a big guy is you're always constantly worried, is this going to fit me? Or if even though it fits me, does it look good on me?
And we're in our 30s, we're in our 40s, we're in our 50s. We've lost hope.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost hope that anything is actually going to fit well. I want you to talk to people. You're wearing the Glitch Michael.
I love this shirt so much.
Which is sold out, by the way. But we do have a new print, depending on when you're watching this. I'm rocking the Mountain Green Michael as well.
The blue splatter one looks really cool, that's too. I'm definitely going to be rocking that
one
a lot.
It's a blue camo, which is available now on onebone.com. But so you were talking...
Plug it all, man.
You know,
we're here for a reason.
So you were talking about the Michael... Mm-hmm. And the versatility. I want you to just kind of repeat what you were saying back there in the warehouse of like what the Michael is for you.
For sure.
We're evolving and adapting, and it's now also called the Bullet Tee.
I noticed that there was a little, you were going to change.
Yeah, so because it's really a bulleted texture fabric.
Okay.
So right now, like our line is growing so much that we have to come up with
Running out of names?
Well, no, it's not even running out of names. It's just categorizing things appropriately and like as we grow. So the bullet tee is what to you?
Okay. So I still own a security company in Vegas, and I still do a lot of security work, especially in the winter months when I'm not on the road and nobody's traveling. So I wear a lot of suits, or I have to wear a lot of, like, even this regularly, I've gone to just concerts wearing this and black pants, black shoes, and my security bag and everything. And I still look professional.
Yeah.
And I don't have to wear flat black or something that says security on it. I still look like I'm representing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I can also throw a suit on. Like, I have a red suit and a black suit that I'll throw on over this. Or I have a black suit with a red bullet tee.
Yeah.
Marsala, I think.
Marsala,
that's the one that I grabbed. That one looks great underneath a black suit. This looks great underneath a red suit.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm grabbing so many more of those. But you can tuck it in, and I can even get sweaty in it, and I can get physical in it.
Yeah.
And then, let's say 2 hours later, we're going to go grab dinner or something, and I put my suit jacket on the back of my chair, and I don't want to have this tucked in and have my stomach hanging over. I can pull it out just like it is now, and there's not a single crease or a line or wrinkle.
Yeah.
You can soak this thing. My favorite thing about this is that if you need to wash it real quick, even in a hotel, I can run into the water in the sink fountain with just some light detergent, leave it hang dry, and it dries quick as heck.
It's insane.
Yeah, like within 2 hours, it's maybe a little cold temperature-wise, but it's still dry.
It's dry. It comes out of the water. Like, that's in the sink, but it comes out of the
washer too,
for me, basically dry.
Almost, if you get a good spin cycle.
Yeah, and not only that, but especially with this t-shirt, you could put it in the dryer for literally like 7 minutes, and it's fully dry.
I've never put one of these I've never needed to.
You could, by the way.
I usually just hang it up.
This won't shrink at all in the dryer. And the other question that I have for you is, you've been rocking this t-shirt since November, let's say.
Easily. And this is the one that I wear the most.
Yeah.
For sure.
How many times have you washed this shirt?
At least once a week. I'll wear it like 2 or 3 times before, unless I sweat in it.
Right. Feel you.
Yeah.
Like, wear a shirt, under a suit, not sweaty, boom, it's back on the...
Exactly. If I'm just going out for the day and if I only wear it for 2-3 hours, I'll go a week or two without having to wash it. But I've never noticed a smell or anything.
So let's say it's been washed 40 times.
At least.
Wow, it's crazy.
If not,
literally, just to make it clear, like, this is the Mountain Green. It just released. I put this on for the first time out of the package.
This looks the same
as
the
shirt.
The shirt
looks the exact same.
And it's gone through some stuff.
Yeah. It's seen some things.
This has had blood on it. This has had sweat. Not my blood.
Right.
This has had sweat on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes my blood.
Wild.
It's an incredibly, I'm shocked at how durable it is. And that's why I told him when I come back here, I'm buying one of every color.
Let's go.
Just have it. Well, me personally, lighter colors don't look the best on me, and I don't really wear anything that matches that.
But until there are some have something that fits you
saying.
Well.
Like, there's the tie-dye that I have, that's lighter than most of the stuff that I wear, and I'm going to get the Sunburst, I think is the name that you said?
Sunset.
Sunset, sorry.
Yeah.
I can go into a concert and do my job as a bodyguard and get covered in water, sweat, anything like that, have drinks thrown on me. And it's crazy that this thing also doesn't really, it holds good smells well and does not hold bad smells.
Yeah.
That's something I've noticed, especially after sweating under the armpits. I can smell the shirt. It still
smells clean. And you smell like your deodorant.
Not just my deodorant, but it also still smells like what I washed it.
Right, right.
And there's so many different ways that you can accessorize with these shirts too. Like,
and how does it make you feel? You know, I can bend over
and nobody sees my ass crack. I can reach for something on the top shelf of a grocery store and nobody sees my belly. Like, it's nice to know that I can literally open my closet door, grab a shirt, put it on, and not have to worry about constantly doing this all day long.
Yeah.
Hoping that it's underneath my
For me, another huge thing is even just sitting on a chair like this, open back, and not having our butt exposed. Yeah, exactly.
the nice little whistle of wind coming past.
Whether you're on a date, whether you're at your office desk, whether you're on
These
a chair
great
like this.
For dates, by the way.
they close, right?
Well, I have a new girlfriend now.
Oh.
I'm sure it's probably because, it's not because of one bone, it's probably because of one bone, so we'll see. But yeah, it is nice to not, I wouldn't say that it gives you confidence, but it gives you the ability to not have to think about that confidence. So it does give you confidence.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, you don't think about it constantly like you do throughout the day with an ill-fitting shirt of having to pull it down, or how does this fit on me, or is it coming up above my waist? Yeah. They're seeing stuff they shouldn't see. Where you can literally exercise, jog, reach for stuff, bend over. You can work in these shirts.
Yeah.
And nobody's seeing anything they're not supposed to.
I agree with you. Like, does the shirt give you confidence? Well, a lot of people do comment and review and say that it does.
I think it brings out the confidence you already have that you're afraid to bring out.
Boom. Yeah. That is it, bro. That is it. Like, it is it is like, it's just awakening the beast of confidence, you know, where it's been muffled for so many years because we're just very uncomfortable with, my shorts are this, my pants are that, my shirt is this, my hoodie is that. And like, now you're at a point where you're putting on every item of clothing and just feeling good. So instead of having to like force that confidence in clothing that you didn't look great in, it's just, it's already there.
Yeah.
You know, it's
the base level of confidence is already there.
Exactly.
It's kind of like the way that you put it, it's kind of like being forced to use chopsticks and somebody finally handing you a fork kind of thing. It's like, this is the way you're supposed to eat.
Raking leaves with pool cues.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's
Seinfeld.
It's so, I didn't get the reference. Yeah. Now I remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very nice to be able to not have to like, working in merchandise like I did, there's so many shirt brands out there. There's like, okay, I can't buy that like Toltec brand because it'll shrink after four washes or it won't be long enough. With these, every time I've washed it, it's been the same size. Every time I've dried it, it's been the same size. And every time I put it on, it's felt amazing.
Say less, my friend. Listen, I want to wrap it up, but I also want to, I am follically challenged in the face.
Oh, no, I'm okay? so sorry.
But you have an extraordinarily strong beard, as do many of the members of the One Bone fam.
I literally trimmed like 5 inches. It was down to here.
Really?
Yeah, I started to look really homelessy. And I got
ZZ Top.
Yeah. Oh, it was down there. I had the good shape to it too, but it was starting to get those like the two sides.
Yeah.
So I took Gandalf. I took about 3 inches off of it, and I went, it still looks kind of bad. So I trimmed it up to where it is now. I'm going to let it go until winter and see what happens.
So it's lush. It's glorious. It doesn't look dried out.
No.
So what are you doing for beard maintenance? Tell the people.
Okay. There's a company that makes U.S.-based products called Fresh Beards.
Okay.
They don't endorse me, but they kind of endorse me.
Okay.
They're based out of Texas, and I told them that my family's from Texas and stuff, and they'll send me like discount codes and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're awesome people. They make everything in-house. This is their beard butter that I'm wearing right now.
Cool.
I just use their oils or their balms. The balm and the butter is basically the same thing, but one has beeswax in it.
Okay.
So if you're working outside or if you know you're going to be sweaty or in a windy area, the beeswax will hold it all together.
Cool.
But this is just a shea butter mixed mostly with some good smells in it.
Okay.
Just take care of your beard. I use an Afro pick too. That's another secret weapon of mine.
Ooh, a little beard hack, ladies and gentlemen.
So I used to use, I got to tell one piece of bullshit about beards. Everybody, all these beard companies, they'll buy these boar's hair brushes for super cheap. And everywhere that you look up will tell you as a bearded person to buy a boar's hair brush and use a boar's hair brush. Terrible.
Okay.
They could just get them for cheap for like $3 a piece and resell them for $18.
Okay.
It's good margins. It's terrible for your beard. You'll get beard rash, beard breakage. I thought I had my pick on.
I saw you.
I
have
do.
It
Maybe
earlier.
I left it in the other room.
Yeah.
But
it's just a straight Afro pick.
Straight Afro, regular $3 Afro pick.
Afro picks.
You just pick it out. But if you use a brush, you're going to cause horrible breakage. Whereas the only time you'll get breakage with an Afro pick is if you have knots, and then the knots just naturally break out anyway.
Boom.
But,
Goliath beard hack you have been waiting for, ladies and gentlemen.
But use an Afro pick. Don't use a brush.
Okay. Cool. I love it. Listen, to recap. You're rocking the Glitch Bullet T, aka the Michael. It's sold out. It's gone.
I had to bring this myself.
Don't even go and look for it. This is available. The Mountain
Green.
I'll
be getting one of those today.
And we just released a bunch of new stuff. We're releasing stuff all the time.
I'm gonna wear this with my red suit for Christmas.
That is a good idea. Yeah. That is a good idea.
Maybe put some ornaments in the beard.
Yeah, exactly.
Tinsel.
A little hat. Yeah, for sure. Goliath, where can people find you if they're hearing this episode and they relate to you and they just want to vibe with you?
I'm literally just at Goliath on everything. Goliath.
Super impressive that you got that, by the way.
Dude, that's a story in its own.
Cool.
But I have it on Instagram, Twitter, which is now X, I guess.
Yeah.
I have it on pretty much everything. Look for the trademark symbol. I guess I've retweeted stuff or I've reposted stories that have gotten me like shadow banned. So if you type in if you put in Goliath without the at sign, you'll get like some glass blower dude.
Okay.
A bunch of other Goliaths before you finally see me. But I'm the only Goliath at Goliath.
Yes, sir. You know the drill. We are onebone.com, One Bone brand on all socials. And
his name's Adam.
Yes. My name is Adam. One of the co-founders here. What, you're on tour with who now?
Okay, so last time I was here, I was with the Chats.
Yeah.
Love those guys, punk rock Australian guys. This time I'm with a gentleman named Ziggy Alberts, another Australian guy. Somehow I always get stuck with the Aussies. Love those guys.
Your next tour is not an Australian guy.
No, so my next tour after this is Macklemore.
Cool.
I'll be with Macklemore for a little bit, and then the rest of the year is penciled in, but this is kind of crazy. One of the bands that I used to do merch for, Tower of Power, they're an old school funk jazz band. They were huge in the 60s and 70s. They did their 50th anniversary tour before COVID, and I was their merch guy.
Okay.
And now I'm going to drive their bus.
Let's go.
It's kind of weird how that stuff happens.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we live in a simulation.
But we do.
But that's pretty much the rest of my year, and then next year is hopefully going to be crazy too.
Amazing. Thank you so much for listening, chilling with us on the biggest podcast. That's another
Thank
episode
you for having me.
With Goliath. Peace.